UK Wine Show, show number 147. Minimum pricing with Michael Thompson from the Portman Group. G'day, welcome to the UK Wine Show for the 13th of March 2009. My name's Chris Scott, and on this week's show we're talking with Michael Thompson from the Portman Group. The Portman Group is a lobby group operated by 9 out of the 10 largest drinks companies. We talked to Michael about their response to the Scottish White Paper that suggested minimum pricing of alcohol. In the spotlight this week, we review the book The Wine Diet, and the quote this week is, "During one of my many treks through Afghanistan, we lost our corkscrew. We were compelled to live on food and water for several days." Who said that? Clues throughout the show? Answer at the end. But first up, we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Screw caps now account for 15% of the world's wine closure market. That's according to a leading screw cap manufacturer, Gwala, whose global sales have increased 25% in the last year to 2.5 billion closures. Since 2006, Gwala say much of their growth has come from Europe, a traditionally tough market for alternative closures to cork, with big growth in France, Germany, Austria, Spain and Italy. And according to Nomacork, a leading synthetic cork producer, synthetic corks represent a further 4 billion closures. The total market for wine closures is 17.5 billion per year, meaning that 11 billion natural corks are used every year. But cork giant Amarim suggests these figures were an overestimate and put screw cap sales at 1.7 billion. They believe sales of both screw caps and natural cork will increase in coming years at the expense of synthetic corks.
Whether we listen to our old friend Carlos de Jesus or the synthetic producers, it seems that the rise of the screw cap is on its way. But be careful. I've had 2 vintages in a row now from a South African Chenin Blanc that I regularly taste that's closed under screw cap, and the wines were not fault-free. I had strong reductive notes in the wine, which implies that there was too much sulfur dioxide in the wine at bottling. The nice thing about screw caps is you know it's not the closure, it's the winery who hasn't been doing the correct preparation before bottling. I've noticed it's only the cheap wines I've found that have a high cork taint. Most of the expensive corks and expensive wines tend to be cork taint-free, thank goodness. Speaking of fine wines, Majestic has bolstered their fine wine offering. What's going on there, Jane?
Well, the UK's biggest wine warehouse chain, Majestic, has bought fine wine merchant Liam Wheeler for £6 million, a modest investment according to the chief executive of Majestic, Steve Lewis. Liam Wheeler will continue to operate from its current base in Suffolk, with Johnny Wheeler, the only remaining family member, becoming president. The future of its 35 staff is not yet known.
Well, a bit of a surprise to see Liam Wheeler snapped up so quickly. Something that's going to take a lot longer is the new minimum pricing in Scotland. Tell us more about that, Jane.
Well, plans by the Scottish Government to introduce a minimum price for alcohol and increase the alcohol buying age to 21 have been put on hold for at least a year after opposition parties forced the delay, believing the moves require brand new legislation and should be fully debated. First Minister Alex Salmond had originally intended to make the amendments to the Licensing Scotland Act 2005 by introducing secondary legislation. That's all from me this week, but don't forget you can visit our website 3050.co.uk for these stories in full.
Cheers, Jane. Apparently they're all worried about the effects of minimum pricing on the Scottish whisky and wanted a full debate. This doesn't mean the issue's dead, it's just that it's going to take more effort to get it through Parliament. We're going to be talking with Michael Thompson from the Portman Group on minimum pricing and other parts of the discussion document in a minute. But before that, we have the spotlight. This week, we review the book The Wine Diet by Roger Corder. So, the spotlight, The Wine Diet by Roger Corder. At times, the book is very heavy going. I've read the book twice now and interviewed Roger about the topics, and I found some of it still very hard to understand. But, as an academic, Roger's got the science out there. Thankfully, he warns us about the difficult Chapter 3, and the rest of the book is much easier to follow. His style is friendly enough and very factual. In the first 11 chapters of the book, Roger tells a story of how he discovered what he thinks is the solution to the French paradox. That is, the French have a relatively high-fat diet, yet don't seem to die of heart disease related to this. Roger's conclusion is that the dark, tannic red wines they drink are rich in proteins, And that's the answer. He explains the science behind his beliefs, debunks a few myths, and suggests both a diet and lifestyle that he reckons will serve you into your 100th birthday. Wine is just one source of proiodines. Food can be high as well. Chapter 12 has 48 recipes that Roger believes are both high in proiodine, but also full of vitamins and essential fats. I tried about four of the recipes while I was reading the book that took my fancy, and by far the best and most interesting was the nut roast. Many of his recipes use nuts, and they give a really satisfactory texture to food, especially when you don't have meat in it. I've become quite a nut fan after trying a few of his recipes. The type of person who I think would love this book needs to be interested in science, wine, and health, in which case they'll think this book is brilliant. If you like two of the categories, science, wine, or health, then you probably think the book is okay, and if you only got one of them, then I'd suggest you probably want to read another book. In the end, I rated this book 90 out of 100, which is not a bad score for such a sciencey text. Next week in the Spotlight, we're going back to look at wine and food matching. We're going to be looking at desserts and dessert wines. But before we have our interview, let's have a look at the quote. If you recall, during my trek through Afghanistan, we lost our corkscrew. We were compelled to live on food and water for several days. Well, it was said less by a person and more as a comment by an actor in a movie. And the movie was called My Little Chickadee, starring the person who said the quote and Mae West. I've not seen the spoof of a cowboy movie, but reading the plot, it definitely looks like fun. Any ideas who said it? Well, while you're having a think about that, next up we've got the interview with Michael Thompson, looking at the proposed Scottish law changes. Hi, I'm here with Michael Thompson from Portman Group. How are you, Michael?
I'm really good. Yeah, how are you?
Good, good. What we're going to do today is we're just going to talk a wee bit about a report that came out in Scotland and the Portman Group's response to it and try and get an understanding of the Portman Group's position on some of these quite contentious issues.
Sure.
Because to me it seems Scotland at the moment is probably the litmus test. That's where a lot of the arguments are going on. You've got Alex Salmond and his government that are really trying to get Scotland more under control from an alcoholic drinks perspective, or at least trying to maybe regulate it.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think that the situation in Scotland is critical because obviously, you know, Westminster and the UK government will be watching very close to see what happens. The reason it is so important is because Scotland is trying to, through the SNP, they're trying to pursue a policy of overall alcohol consumption reduction. So that is trying to get everyone to drink less. Mm-hmm. And the theory being that if everyone drinks less, then the harmful drinkers will also be drinking less, and therefore you will reduce alcohol-related health harm and crime and social disorder that's associated with heavy drinking. The UK government so far, to date, has not followed that kind of tactic. They are trying to target harmful drinkers, the irresponsible minority, and we support that because why should responsible drinkers be penalised for the sins of the minority? And actually, we would say it's not a legitimate public policy goal. Let's make a comparison. If you have a problem with road traffic accidents, what you could do is you could increase the tax on driving and motorists and all motorists to reduce the number of hours that people will drive, which will logically follow, and therefore cut the number of road traffic accidents. Well, we would say you wouldn't do that. What you would do is you would target poor drivers. You would identify them. You'd give them help and educate them to make them better drivers. And you would enforce the law so when they were breaking the road traffic laws, you could find them and punish them. And the same ideas, the same principles transfer over to harmful drinking. What you should be doing is looking at the minority that drink excessively, offering them help and support at an early stage, educating them, and also enforcing the law when they are breaking the law because they've got drunk and are causing a nuisance in town centres. So it's the education and it's the enforcement of the laws, but they should be targeted at the minority.
Well, let's look at Scotland to start off with. Is there a problem in Scotland? On the one hand, just a couple of days ago, there was some press that made it something like the Scottish drink 11 litres of pure alcohol a year. And down in England, it's more like 9 litres of pure alcohol.
I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever that there is a serious problem across the UK. in terms of heavy drinking, excessive consumption. And that is then therefore filtering through to and impacting on the health service and the criminal justice system. We're not going to deny that there isn't a serious problem. We will also look at evidence that suggests that the problem across the UK is getting better, it's improving. So there are fewer harmful drinkers now than there were 5 years ago. Overall alcohol consumption is falling and has been for the last 4 years. It's down 5% across the UK. And if you look at the statistics for alcohol-related health harms, there's quite a bit of evidence there to suggest that they are now stabilizing. So
alcohol health harm?
So that's people that are going to, the people that are dying or people that are in hospital because of drinking too much.
Okay.
And they've been rising for the last 15 years. There is evidence to suggest they are now beginning to level off. But I'd go back to the point I made earlier that actually it's the minority that we should be targeting. It may be that by the Scottish Government pursuing the policy that they've got of making us all drink less, trying to get the nation's overall consumption down, that may impact, obviously, on harmful drinking. But we would say it's the wrong way around. What they should be doing is targeting harmful drinkers.
I noticed in your response, you talked about being drunk as not being socially acceptable. In the UK, there is a certain level of social acceptance that you're a bit tanked up, and you know, you go down most high streets on a Friday night, and it's not hard to see people who consider that to be socially acceptable. Surely by forcing everybody to drink less, there'll be less people consuming at any particular time, so that you'll end up with it will become less sociable, and if it becomes less sociable, then less socially acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to remember that the vast majority of people are drinking in moderation, and drinking in moderation is compatible with a healthy lifestyle. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. Why should they be penalised? Why should everyone be penalised for the sins of a few? You know, and it may be that the UK government follows suit. They may decide that actually we should all be drinking less. Taking away my job, I would say, and my role here, I would say, well, that is not the right way of actually developing public policy. You know, what you should be doing is giving help and support to problem drinkers, educating them, and enforcing the law when they're breaking the law.
If you agree that maybe the Scottish and the UK there is an issue there, what about countries like Germany and France where alcohol consumption is considerably higher in places? You don't hear the outcry from there so much. Maybe France a wee bit these days under Sarkozy, but Germany, is it me? I haven't really heard any issues from Germans, but they're still, according to your information, the Brits drink 13% less than the French and 17% less than the Germans.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's obviously a big cultural difference, and that comes down to the drinking pattern. In this country, we're more likely to be drinking to excess once or twice a week. Binge drinking, as it's known. As in the continent, they will potentially be drinking more, but drinking more regularly, drinking more often. So it comes down to the kind of the patterns of drinking. But the culture is also totally different. So in northern European countries, again, people tend to binge drink, as in southern European countries, they tend to be drinking less, but perhaps more often. And of course, the problem we've got in this country is that and this is what the Home Office are very concerned about, is the young people in particular that are at risk of doing themselves immediate harm by just drinking too much on a Friday night, on a Saturday night, getting carried away, you know, and those are the people that are very visible in our town centres. They're creating a nuisance, turning our town centres into ghettos. So, but they are again in the minority. And that's why we would go back to the point that actually what we should be doing is trying to identify them and help them. And if we can't persuade them through education to change their behaviour, we should be using law enforcement as a tool.
You use the word binge drinking. I'm not a big fan of that word because I don't know what it means. I've looked it up. I've tried to get a good definition of it. It's bandied around. But what does binge drinking mean? There's no official.
No, I mean, that's a very good point, and it's certainly something that the UK government has been looking at. You know, it means different things to various people. To me, it just means, you know, drinking too much. It is drinking too much in one go, in one session. So going out, the government would say if you're going out and actually drinking double their recommended daily level, if that's your level of intake, then you're binge drinking.
Okay, so it's about two pints as a binge.
Two pints wouldn't be. If it's a pint of standard strength beer, you're probably going to be looking at 4 pints.
4 pints.
Because it would be 8 units would be a binge for a man. If you're a woman, it would be 6 units.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's 2 large glasses of wine.
We talk in wine terms. So what does that work out? Four pints is what? That's probably about 2 big glasses, 500 mils? No, it must be about a bottle.
Yeah.
Is a binge.
That's it, yeah.
A bottle is a binge. Okay, I'll remember that next time I open a bottle. So one of the things that the Scottish government's tried to raise anyway was the concept of minimum pricing for alcohol. Did you oppose it? And what was your reasons?
Yeah, I mean, we just don't believe that, that price is the main contributor to harmful drinking. So if you look at, as we've already talked about, you look at the continent, where in France and in Spain, they don't have the same kind of problems, and alcohol there is far cheaper. In other countries where it's more expensive, they can have similar problems or even far worse problems. So we just don't believe that price is the main factor. Without a doubt, it's basic economics, the price is related to overall consumption. If something becomes cheaper, as a nation, we'll be buying more of it. We're likely to be buying more of it. But that doesn't mean to say that people are going to be drinking in any more of a harmful way. So if you were to raise the price, people that are going out, and this comes back to the point about the culture, people that have the intention of going out and getting hammered and drinking too much, they're going to do that, regardless of whether they're paying another 20p for their pint or for their glass of wine. So it goes back to the crux of the matter is that is it overall consumption that is the main indicator that we should be looking at, or is it the drinking patterns of the irresponsible minority?
You took the point of view that it's overall consumption, then obviously price and minimum pricing
would be a tool.
But because you don't believe that, you think it's fine for people to drink a reasonable amount as long as it's not in a bingy type of way. Is that the issue?
Yeah, I mean, we would say that if you look at even in the statistics for this country, for UK-wide, there was a rise in consumption up until 2004. And in the 4 years before that, consumption was going up. But the number of women drinking excessively was actually falling. If you look at the statistics recently, alcohol consumption has been falling since 2004, but the amount that under 18s who are drinking has increased. So under 18s who drink what they're drinking at a greater level. So overall consumption masks drinking trends. So that's why you shouldn't be going after overall consumption. You should be trying to change and tackle the irresponsible behavior of the minority that are drinking to excess and, going out with the intention of getting drunk. And that's why the education is so important, because through education, you can influence most people. Most people, when you make them aware of the risks, if you give them information about alcohol and its effects, they will make the right choice, the healthy choice for themselves.
Obviously, as a drinks group taking the position of the green drinks industry, it's not in your interests to discourage sales. So I could see where you're coming from and your point of view. There's two ways of setting a minimum price. You either do it through taxation and you bump up the price. Effectively, that's good for the government. Neutral probably to the retailers, but maybe not quite, because they'll have a decrease in sales if the taxation is high enough. And for the drinks industry, that's the price is going up, but you're not getting a slice of it. Whereas if there's a minimum threshold of, say, £4 or £5 for a bottle of wine, if, say, not allowed to sell wine below £5, then the retailer and or possibly the producer are going to be quids in, as opposed to using taxation to ensure that the price doesn't go to £5, because then the government's the winner, and whether it's right for the consumer.
Yeah, I mean, we would say that, if you look at the international evidence, that it just blows away the myth that actually, price is the major factor when it comes to harmful drinking. I noticed very recently that Alan Campbell from the Home Office Minister was giving evidence to Parliament, and he said there would have to be a major increase in the price of alcohol to have an effect on harmful drinking.
But now, isn't that what the government's proposed? Over the next 5 years or so, it's going up quite a bit.
Yeah, but they are, I don't think, and then you would have to look at the, have to ask the government about this, but when we ask them about it, they will say that that's not to curb excessive consumption. They're doing it to make more money, bring more money in for the Treasury. So they're doing it for commercial, their own commercial reasons. The point about pricing is that if you were to establish a minimum price, and you decided for some reason that it was going to be effective, and you decided that it would be popular with voters through a politician, we would say the fairest way of doing that would be through a minimum unit price, because that would actually influence price at the point of purchase.
Portman's group seems to be drinks agnostic in terms of which is the better. A lot of people would say that wine, thank goodness, which is what I'm into, is a more healthy option perhaps than, say, vodka or beer.
Again, I mean, I think this is a bit of a myth, really. You know, I've struggled since I've come to the Portman Group to kind of understand these arguments, and we get them from the beer sector as well. They will say that, you know, people that are drinking a traditional pint are not the ones that are causing trouble. The fact is, alcohol is alcohol. All alcohol can be consumed to excess. If you're drinking too much, it doesn't really matter what you're drinking in terms of your health and the way that you behave. Therefore, we would treat all alcohol the same way.
That's because you have to be.
You know, I noticed that the Conservatives have said very recently that they would use tax to target, you know, cider products and to target alcopops. Because they are the drink of choice of harmful drinkers.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if they do that, people will just switch products. They will just go and drink something else. And if they are, you know, if they're going out with the intention of getting drunk, they will continue to do so.
Obviously, representing the drinks groups, one of the options if minimum pricing is put in place, and I've seen this in other countries, is either there'll be a big flood to France to buy cheap booze and bring it back, which is what used to happen a lot. I don't hear about it so much now, but when I first started my business in 2003, people would say, why would I buy wine from you? I can go to France and get it really cheap. And it's true, and they'd come home with large amounts of it. Or, as I know quite a few people in Australia do this, you just still your own. I know people who run stills, and they produce gallons and gallons of pretty dodgy ethanol. And
yeah, sure, or they will buy it from the back of a van or a car boot on a street corner. You know, so that's the thing that we've said to the Scottish government. If they go ahead and proceed and introduce a minimum price, people will simply use the internet to order alcohol. They'll cross the border. They'll go down to Carlisle. I mean, in fact, you know, if I was a businessman, I'd be setting up a hypermarket in Carlisle right now. And the same applies to, you know, to European situations as well. And even in the UK, you know, you can go to Cali. So, you know, if you are going out with the intention of buying alcohol and just, you know, and getting drunk, you know, you will continue to do so.
I'm vaguely, well, not vaguely, I'm fairly pro-drink, but on the one hand, I'm really, I accept that alcohol is a drug, and it's like coffee or cocaine or ecstasy. It's just where you are on that continuum.
It's addictive, yeah.
Yeah, it's, well, it can be.
Can be, potentially, yeah.
Yeah. So as a result, people need to be aware. And I always think, if you say, right, if alcohol is a drug, what's the difference between someone giving away a bit of heroin to someone or selling booze at below cost? You're effectively giving it away to encourage people. And the supermarkets do this all the time. They use alcohol as a loss leader because they know that it draws the punters in. They will get higher sales. They see, you talk to people in the retail industry and they know they see big spikes in sales, not in complementary sales as well as the alcoholic sale from that. Without minimum pricing, how do you stop below cost sales? Because I think that's wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, we wouldn't necessarily agree that on social responsibility grounds that it's wrong. I would just say commercially it's wrong as a practice, and we would recognise that alcohol is different from washing powder. You know, and they shouldn't be using it as a loss leader. They shouldn't be selling it cheaper than it costs to make. Mm-hmm. The issue, yeah, is how on earth do you, first of all, Do you identify that? How do you change their behaviour? How do you regulate it effectively? It's a very good question. It's one that the UK government's looking at the moment. What we would like to say is to the retailers, okay, guys, we know you're doing this. Surely, first of all, can you recognise that it's damaging and it shouldn't continue? And if you can recognise that, can you do something about it? Of course, the problem is the complications that arise because of competition law. You know, at what stage can people get around the table and say, okay, we are not going to sell alcohol below a certain price? So if there is an easy way of eradicating this and sorting out the problem, you know, we would be fully behind it.
See, to me, taxation does that by jamming up the cost of tax so that the, like at the moment, a £3 bottle of wine is £2 of tax. If it was £4 of tax on a bottle of wine, the cheapest you could possibly sell the wine normally is about £5. So,
but the taxation will go on to the producers. The taxation, it may then affect what the retailers are paying, but if they're going to sell it at a loss, you know, they will continue to do that.
It won't be at £1 for a £3 bottle of wine, at more like £3 for a £5 bottle of wine when you include the tax.
Yeah, but why should you be punishing the producers if you're...
Why are the producers punished?
If you are... because that's where you would be taxing. If you're looking at minimum pricing, that would be at the point of sale.
Taxation doesn't affect the producer. The producer produces a spirit, and they don't pay tax until it's sold.
Yeah, but the producer will still be paying the tax, will still be taxed on it.
I think that ultimately the consumer is paying the tax. Whenever the price of wine goes up, all my suppliers send me a note saying, we're now going to add 4p to the cost of every case. So I don't see how the producer is carrying that cost because it's passed straight to me and I pass it straight through to the consumer.
But you're selling it though, aren't you?
Yeah.
But you are then having to pay, you know, the producer is having to pay the additional tax. That if they're then passing it on to you, you know, if you were selling it a loss leader, you wouldn't then be passing it on to the consumers.
There's no way a producer, well, unless they've got a big marketing budget, is going to fund all the duty if the duty is high enough. You know, I know that some producers, the supermarkets, stick them to them and say, look, you've got to pay X, Y, Z, and that's it,
or else we don't do business. Yeah, they play hardball with them.
We're going to delist you. Yeah. And so they have to take that out of their marketing budget to pay for the... But if the tax is so high, there's no way they can do it at such a low cost. You know, it's not like... The marketing budgets aren't going to be improved by the fact the taxation is going to go up, so the cost...
But it will be incremental to... If your intention is to change consumer behaviour because you accept that price is an issue, you would be much more... it'd be much more effective to put the increase on the point of sale rather than actually penalising everyone in the supply chain.
What, like a VAT type product?
Yeah, I mean, like the Scottish Government's proposed, where you would have for every unit of alcohol, there would be a minimum unit price, say, of 40p per unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that would then be, you couldn't then sell the alcohol below that price. That would be established, that would set the barrier. That would actually... You know, if you accept the price as an issue, that would then, or the major issue, that would then affect consumers at point of sale, as there are too many anomalies in the system at the moment where, you know, you can use taxation and it might be passed on by some to, in some cases, to consumers, and others it won't be.
It's interesting anyway, isn't it? It's an interesting...
Yeah, debate. I mean, it is interesting, and it'd be good to see, it'd be interesting to see what the Scottish Government does. And to see what kind of effect it has.
All right, Mike, I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much. Yes.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. At times, I felt Michael was almost agreeing with the Scottish proposals in places. Quite interesting for a lobbyist. Next week, we're back on wine, and we're talking with James Miles from LiveX, the fine wine trading platform. But before we finish up, let's have the quote. During one of my treks through Afghanistan, we lost the corkscrew. We were compelled to live on food and water for several days. What a cracking quote. It was said by Cuthbert J. Twill in My Little Chickadee, 1940. The actor who said it was W.C. Fields. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.